again, everybody. It's time for the Mainland Podcast, episode number 121. I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com. As you can tell, much closer to 100% healthy this week than last week. Joining me is my partner in crime up in Tallahassee, David Rowe. How are you this week?
Like you, I am on the mend a bit. You can't tell because, you know, it's hard to see a cracked ribbed, you know, especially over the radio. But I can tell you that if I cough, I don't double over in excruciating pain anymore. So, hey, progress.
That is good. We're not on the radio, Dave. This is a podcast.
You know what? Give me my fantasies, man. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I am much more able to speak this week, which is good. Sinus infection is being battled by a good dose of antibiotics, and I am ready to go to talk about win number three on the bounce, David Rowe. We have win three in a row, a 2-0 victory over the Philadelphia Union on the road. Previously, Philadelphia had not lost at home this season, only just 1-0-2 on the season at home prior to that game. But in MLS, you have to take every game on the road as very serious, no matter what your opponent, you know, is shaping up to be for the course of the year. And you cannot take any road point for granted. And especially with the start Orlando City had, you can't really take any point for granted. And it was nice to get above the 500 mark with a surprise win on the road, especially the way that the Union came out really flying early.
That was a big 3 points. Like you say, you know, with the slow start that Orlando had, we were getting comments and complaints and worried, furrowed brows. So having 3 points in Philadelphia is outstanding, especially how the Lions went about it.
Mm-hmm. Came out in the 4-2-3-1 again, this time no Scott Sutter is nursing an injury. Day-to-day is his status. In fact, still has not returned to daily training. We'll talk a little bit more about the injury situation later. RJ Allen getting the start at right back. And in the 18, welcome, Yuri Rosell. Welcome to a team sheet. did not see time in the game, but it was nice to just know that he's actually on the team.
One step closer to having him out on having that another beard out on the field.
That's right. And you know, the interesting thing, Orlando with not the shortest of week. I mean, they played Sunday then Friday, but Jason Christ decided to reward the energy guys from the Portland win and got them the start at Philadelphia with Chris Mueller on the right and Stefano Pino on the left in the attacking midfield, moving Merrim and Coleman to the bench with Dom up top, Sasha there as well. Will Johnson and Yoshi Otun started in the defensive midfield. But early on in the game, RJ Allen getting forward, pulled up with an apparent hamstring injury. They're calling it the lower body injury. Which could be anything below the waist. It's a lower body injury, but that's kind of code for – it's usually a quad, a hamstring, a calf, you know, a groin strain. Usually those are the lower body injuries that they talk about. And so one of those varieties probably in the upper leg area for RJ Allen. He had to go out. And they had Donny Toya looking like he was ready to come in. And then, you know, a little bit of shifting gears and Christian Aguita comes on. And you're like, well, he's not a right back. because Will Johnson moved to right back. And Christian took over in the center of the park with Yoshi next to him. And honestly, Dave, from that point on, David Akam, not much of a problem the rest of the night. David Akam and CJ Sapong have had great success against Orlando City, had to be licking their lips, you know, when they saw that on the schedule, and they came out flying, like I said. But the fact of the matter is, other than a couple early Akam attempts, once that change was made, he was pretty quiet.
Yeah, Christian came on and did probably the best performance we've seen from him in Orlando, or at least that I can remember. I'm not surprised with the move. As we've spoken about before, Johnson is very versatile. I'm sure Jason wanted to keep him on the field, get Christian in there, and that allowed him to do it. Evidently, Christian has been fantastic in practice, which allowed Jason the confidence to put him out there. Mm-hmm. As you said, when we talked about the key matchups, one of the things that I said was containing Sapong and Akam, and once Higita was out there, that's exactly what happened, just like you said. So it was a move that when it happens, who know, as you're watching it, you're not sure, okay, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Is he going to get a yellow 3 seconds in? Because that's what we've been used to before. But no yellows and outstanding defensive play from Christian. And it was a very impressive performance.
Very mature performance, I would say, from Christian Higita. I'm on board with you. I think that might have been his best game as a Lion in his time in Orlando. And I think maybe, I mean, you get that good outing and you always want to say, well, maybe he's turned the corner, but you know, show me that 2 or 3 more times in a row and let's get on with it and take that next step in your evolution and become that player that Orlando City coveted so dearly before, you know, the first kick of the ball in MLS for the team, because we know he's got the talent. We know he has the tools to be a really great number six. He just hasn't shown the maturity. He hasn't shown the, the sort of the understanding of playing within himself. I mean, everything about him was good this past week. I mean, his passing was phenomenal. He didn't try to do too much with the ball. He didn't fumble the ball around in his feet. He got it out of there when under pressure. He didn't take the extra touch and try to make some fancy turn and lose the ball and then, you know, look up at the ref like, oh, why didn't you call a foul there? He, you know, we've seen all of that from him before. We did not see that from him on Friday night, and it was really a tremendous performance. You know, he was probably among the 2 or 3 guys that I thought were man of the match worthy. Another one of those guys would be the guy who made those early stops, and that's Joe Bendick, who had, again, his best game of the season to date. We saw him make a couple of very crucial saves, getting his hand on a couple of crosses that may have otherwise been tap-ins. But I thought that the defense did mostly a good job of keeping the shots either outside the box or out wide for the most part. Akam got in at a decent angle a couple times, but you know, he's got the speed to do that, to turn that corner and head toward goal. So that's not a surprise. I didn't think Sapong was especially dangerous in the game. He had 1 or 2 looks, but nothing, you know, I thought they did a pretty good job on him, and I think that brings the third guy to mind in the game that was outstanding is Lamine Sané. I thought Sané and Tarek playing in place of the injured Jonathan Spector did a fantastic job in the center back pairing.
Yes, that was the Joe that we were used to that we hadn't seen yet this season. So I'm glad that he decided to come back because it made a big difference. I think that like you said, the center backs were able to get things wide. There wasn't a lot that came up the middle. They cut down the angles for Joe, which of course makes his job easier. With Christian in there, not fouling and making good decisions and good passes, everything came together in that back third that allowed the clean sheet. It was a total defensive team effort from goalie on up. And of course, with the offense getting goals, that gives them breathing room and confidence to do the job that they did that night.
And of course, you can't have the win without scoring some goals on your own. And early on, it looked like, man, what is going on? That's at least 3 this year. Another would-be goal cleared off the line early by the Philadelphia defense. Andre Blake beaten. I believe it was Pino with the shot. I think live, I couldn't really tell on the replay. It looked like it might have been Tarek, but I think it was in the aftermath of a short corner, I believe, and an opportunity there for, I believe it was Pino who put it on frame, beat Blake, but it was knocked off the line by Jack Elliott. And it's just, oh my God, here we go again. These teams that we're playing are making these unbelievable, you know, saving plays left and right. But not to worry, because Dom Dwyer scores when he wants, as you know, Dave. And
I do know.
A fantastic little scoop chip pass from Sasha Kljestan, and a well-timed run from Dom, who was kept on side by the left back, whose name's escaping me at the moment. Matthew Real, and he got in, and he beat Blake Cleanly and made it 1-0, and he didn't do his flip, which is okay. He doesn't have to do his flip every time, you know, save that flip for special moments.
Sure.
But he put the team ahead with his fourth goal, Dave, in three games. He played 12 games last year for the club and scored four goals, so he's on a little bit better pace this year.
Dom definitely is feeling it right now. He did a little hop to get back on side, and then when Sasha put that ball very nicely, he made his run. I've never seen the back trap that he's used before, but it was effective to get the ball down, and then he got it on his right foot, and that was all she wrote, like you said. He scores when he wants. So that changed the dynamic, especially given that the defense was doing so well. Like you said, we can do without the backflip. I kind of liked the little stroke the chin, give the fans a look thing. It was
thinking
it was,
face emoji is what that was.
Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty good. I liked it. Now, of course, there was some controversy about that goal, but that may be for a talk for a little bit later.
So the Lions were not done. They were not done. There was absolutely nothing done about the Lions in the first half. They decided to score another one. Chris Mueller, with a great individual effort, dribbled up to the top of the box, lost the ball a little bit, and then took it back from Jack Elliott. He said, excuse me, I'll take that, pokes it behind Elliott, and then poked it behind Andre Blake into the lower left corner of the net, made it 2-0. Two goals in two games for the rookie, Dave, and he really was, again, an engine room for the for Orlando City.
I am thoroughly impressed and glad that Mueller is doing exactly what I hoped that he would do, which is bring that energy and that determination to the offense, and he's being rewarded for it by getting those goals. Like you said, he lost that ball once he got in the box, but he didn't give up on it. And that just determination allowed him to get it back and get that goal. Of course, once he did, everybody is looking for that knee slide. Well, Mueller was having nothing of that. He decided that he wanted to do a little Cristiano instead, and did that little jump arms down thing. Mm-hmm. It's funny, somebody online did a side-by-side where Ronaldo does that, and Mueller is doing it at exactly the same time, and then a teammate comes up and, you know, hugs him, and it's almost exactly the same shot. It's absolutely hilarious. Now, let's be clear. I don't think that Chris Mueller thinks that he's Ronaldo, so don't anybody go thinking that the kid's getting a full head. I think he's enjoying himself. And if he wants to go out and have fun like that and celebrate after a goal, I'm all for it as long as the goals keep coming.
Yeah, he does. He's just a kid that's emulating someone that he looks up to, and you know, much like you see basketball stars, young basketball stars emulating, you know, the LeBron James celebration. That's kind of how he was doing it. And then he threw in a little bit of himself there. He did the cash
a little
money,
cash.
Yeah, the cash fingers there. He did the cash money for Cash Mueller, and it was 2-0. And Orlando saw that out to the break and made it with the two-goal advantage into the locker room. And really, you just knew that if the team came out and could defend for 15 minutes and kind of withstand with, you know, whatever Philadelphia was going to do, their adjustments, you thought they had a pretty good chance to hang on and get a result, and you knew that at some point Philadelphia was going to come after them. And you know, I honestly thought the second half was much less hectic than the first half. I thought that Philly did push some numbers forward late and get some, you know, some possession around the box that could have been dangerous, but it really seemed that Orlando took care of everything. They ended up pulling Pigneault and Mueller and putting on Merrim and Coleman to help see out the remaining time, and you know, with only those two substitutions remaining after having to put Iguita on for Allen in the first half. It was both of them, again, good moves. Merrim is a good possession guy. He helped quite a bit. In fact, he almost helped Dom Dwyer make it 3-0 with a great pass that Dom somehow shot over the bar from the top of the six. Not really sure how he missed that one. I really thought that was going to make it 3-0.
Well, since we know he scores when he wants, I guess he didn't want to score that time.
He must not have wanted to score.
He must not have wanted to. But no, you're right. After that initial little spurt to start the second half, they were able to maintain their defensive form, see out the game, and play exactly how you would want a team with a two-goal lead to play. They were confident. They maintain possession when they needed to, and defended well when they didn't have the ball.
Absolutely, and I thought the team really did do well in the area where I thought the key matchup was. I believe that I said midfield against midfield, and
yes,
I
you did.
I really thought that Bedoya and Madunyanin were not able to thread, you know, deadly passes through to the attack, and I thought that. So I think that the Lions did a good job there. I also thought that Akam and Fafapiko and Borek, Dochkal. I thought all three of them were more or less handled. I think they're all dangerous players, and you can't completely shut them down for 90 minutes. But I thought more or less the defensive midfield held their own against those three, and we'll also include the fullbacks in that as well. But I thought that the midfield won the game for Orlando City. So I definitely thought that that was a key matchup in the game. And I definitely thought that that young defensive line for the Union was something that Dom Dwyer could exploit, and he did that. And it was good to see that. And not only did Dom do it, but Chris Mueller also exploited that back line's inexperience as well, with being able to not only lose the ball, but then just take it right back and just continue on and have that hard work to not give up on the play. So 2-0 win in the end. Coming home with 3 points is awesome. And now we will look ahead to the San Jose Earthquakes this Saturday night. But, Dave, who was your man of the match?
This was probably the most difficult man of the match selection of the year so far, because there were a lot of good performances that night. Like you said, Higuita was good. Ben was good, or Bendick was good. Dom played well. You know, you love what Chris Mueller is doing, but gosh, at the end of the day, I'm going to give it to Higuita for the reason that it was the performance we've wanted for him since he got here, and I want to reward him for that. You know, we've had games where Joe's been, you know, on before, and you know, we've only seen so much of Sané, but I want to reward Higuita for that performance, and hope that he's able to make that a habit rather than a one-off. So he's my man of the match.
All right, not a bad choice. For me, it came down to Sané and Bendick, and Sané was really a tour de force in that game, and very quietly. You don't really notice him, but then you look at the stat sheet and you see all the clearances, the recoveries, and the interceptions and the blocked shots, and you go, wow, what a game this guy had. And add to that the fact that everything was sort of kept out wide and out above the penalty area. Just a really dominant performance, I think, by him. But on the other hand, you know, the other guy that I would have considered was Joe Bendick, because early on in the game, he kept his team level with some really big moments. And then once the team took the lead, he really preserved that with a couple more big saves at a time when, if Philadelphia had cut that lead to 2-1, they still had plenty of time, and then, you know, then they would also have the momentum. So I really think that from a total impact on the game perspective, Joe's big moments really lifted the team. And so, Joe Bendick, you get my man of the match this week.
Hard to argue with any of that. Like I said, there was so much positive. This was probably the best game we've seen from the Lions. I don't think there's any doubt about that, actually. Top to bottom, everybody played well, and it showed in the result.
Yeah, you really didn't see many of the blazing fast counterattacks with odd man numbers in that game. You saw, you know, any... There really weren't that many critical midfield turnovers, and the ones that were, there was plenty of coverage usually to force everything wide and having them have to cross the ball in. Com created a few things with his speed, but other than that, I definitely thought they you know, they composed themselves well and, you know, definitely played like a team. And I think this, again, is another step toward their development. They're not where they want to be yet. There's work to be done. But I think that we're starting to see the tip of what this team can be. The you know, we're scratching that surface of the potential of this team. And I, you know, again, you look at the performance. You know, I know a lot of people on the on social media and in our forums have said, you know, if it wasn't Philadelphia, we would have lost, because, you know, they have to be sad sacks and talk like that. But I think that part of the reason that, yes, Philadelphia's forwards are struggling to score goals, they're not very confident right now, but also think that, you know, the team by and large made it difficult on them. It wasn't anything like they weren't missing from the six like Dom did, let's put it that way.
No, they certainly weren't. There were no easy chances for Philly, and you have to chalk that up to the defensive midfield and the back line, and also, of course, Joe back stopping them all.
Yeah, I mean, the best opportunity was probably a near-post chance for a Com, but, you know, there's not a lot of room there to score, and Joe took care of this near-post, and he did his job. So, you know, I think in any game, you're not going to get a clean sheet in Major League Soccer very often unless your keeper makes two or three big saves. And they got five saves total out of Joe, and I think three of them were pretty difficult ones, and he made them. So he did what his team needed him to do. The defense did, you know, by and large what they need to do. Can they get better? Sure. You know, again, it's good to see the progress. And we will see how they carry on this week against San Jose.
Going for four in a row.
Yep. We mentioned RJ Allen's injury, Scott Sutter's injury, both of them still out. Jonathan Spector also out as of Tuesday training, none of them on the pitch. But they are all listed as day-to-day. All of them are possible for the weekend, although Jason Christ said he's not optimistic about Spector playing Saturday, but he's not ruling it out. It's just so difficult to tell with concussion protocol. And I know that after losing Jonathan so quickly after getting him back, they're going to be extremely careful about when they bring him back. So it's a luxury when you have Sané and Tarek playing well, that you can have your captain take an extra week and again, this is a concussion, so we don't know how long these kind of symptoms will linger and when he'll be able to get back on the field. So no need to rush him back. The right back situation is a little bit more concerning, just because you've got two capable starters that are both out, and now you've got Will Johnson, who has to kind of step into that role, and it's good to know that he can, but over the course of time, those are the things that teams start to pick on. You know, you go into that game against Philadelphia, they've not game planned against attacking Will Johnson at right back. San Jose, however, they will be game planning for that. So things are a little bit different. The other thing that he can do, he being Jason Christ, is that he could play a left-footed player on the right side. He doesn't like doing that for obvious reasons, mainly because it's much harder to get crosses in. But it can be done, and it's been done on occasion by other players. I know that Kevin Alston played both sides for Orlando City when he was here. And I think we've seen also Bowden on the right side on one occasion. So, you know, guys can do that, and, you know, if they need to, they will. But, we'll see what we see on Saturday. But my guess is that Igita played so well that he'll try to go back to that. And we may even see Rossell get some minutes late if things are well at hand, in that game.
The good news is that the depth that they went out and got is there. We would have been in a lot bigger trouble 2 years ago.
Right. It's funny because early on in the season, all the attackers were out. Now all the defenders are starting to get hurt. Mm-hmm. You had Kleshin out with suspension. You had Dom Dwyer out. You had Pino hurt his ankle. You had, Coleman out. So you had all these attacking pieces gone. And now you've got all the back line pieces are starting to break down. So it's you're never 100% healthy once you're in season. But hopefully the injury bug will stop biting so that these guys can round into form and get everybody on the field, all the expected starters. But yeah, it's good to have depth when these kinds of things happen. Dave, the Orlando Pride played again.
That they did.
They played on Sunday in Portland, a rematch of the NWSL semifinal from last year, which Portland won 4-1. It did not go great for Orlando, but it started off okay. I mean, Orlando took the lead on a Christine Nairn steal. She gets the podcast bump. Yep. Steals the ball in the midfield, feeds Chi Abogagu, basically just gives her the ball and says, all you got left to do is beat the keeper. Go do it. And Chi did that.
And she did.
And made it 1-0. And things looked like they might get a little bit better. I think about minute 26 when a nice cross from Carson Pickett came in for Kristen Edmonds at the top of the box. She ripped one and unfortunately hit the crossbar and just smacked off the crossbar. Completely beat Adriana Franch. And it would have been 2-0. But instead, 2 minutes later, Lindsay Horan scores a golazo and makes it 1-1. And eventually, Christine Sinclair, left unmarked in the box, scored and made it 2-1. And Orlando falls again to the Thorns. The Pride have never beaten the Thorns. They were much, much better against the Thorns in this game. Of course, missing so very many pieces, including basically a World Cup team worth of midfielders were missing in that game. I mean, you're missing Marta, you're missing Camilla, you're missing Alana Kennedy, Emily Van Egmond, all of them very talented midfield players. And really, to me, that's where the Pride lost the game. I thought that Christine Nairn actually had maybe her best game so far in a Pride uniform. Danny Weatherholt was also very good. But there's still something missing, something not quite working right in that midfield. Kristen Edmonds played. It looked almost like a diamond midfield at times. It looked almost like a 3-5-2 at times with a back line of Krieger was ostensibly the right back, but it really looked like a Krieger, Zdorsky, Presley back line with sort of wing back play from Edmonds and Carson Pickett. And Carson Pickett had a tough game. She was getting roasted by Margaret Purse all game long, just getting turned inside out. She did cross the ball well the few times she was able to get up the field, but she really struggled defensively in that game. And, it really was a matter of, when I say the midfield struggled, there was no service to Sydney LaRue and Alex Morgan. They really didn't get scoring chances. They were not necessarily marked out of the game so much as that there was just no creativity, no production, no quality to get them the ball. And the team got a little stretched. There was a gap between the midfield and the forward line. And then Chi started to drop into that area and get on the ball. But whenever she did get on the ball, Dave, she dribbled into blind alleys. She would not pick out the right pass. She'd have two options, and she'd pick the one that was covered and try to put the ball through a defender who was directly in her line of sight. It was a very frustrating game to watch for me, because she is a player that's capable of much more, and she really was in enough positions in that game to have just a major impact on the game, but just didn't make the most of her opportunities, in my opinion.
Correct. It was frustrating to watch indeed, like you said, with no chances being created out of the midfield for your strikers. It was telling how little Alex Morgan was mentioned during the match, which was almost never. If she's, you know, she's a striker. If the ball is not getting up there to her to do something with, then you're not going to hear anything. So that spoke to me of the trouble that the team was having. But like you said, with so many players out on international duty, we're looking at a bit of a partial team here, just like we did with the Lions, you know, when they had so many out on injury. So I don't think it's anything to worry about as far as the season goes. We will get those players back. Additionally, despite the struggles, like you said, we did play better against them this time. Instead of 4-1, it was 2-1, so that's progress. And you got a lot of players getting some time on the ball, on the field, and getting that experience. So I'm trying to keep the positive in mind. I would have liked to have had it open up a little bit. Like you said, maybe Chi is able to do a little bit more, pick some better passes, and create some opportunities. But it, at the end of the day, it is what it was. I think that the team will rebound, and Alex will get back on the scoring side again pretty soon.
Well, that would be great. The that should hopefully happen this Sunday at home against the Houston Dash. The one of the key things for me in this this past game, the NWSL debut of Abby Alinsky. She got on the field and she actually looked very good defensively. Wasn't doing too great passing the ball, but you know, that's a heck of a situation to commit to. Your first game ever, you're down on the road in a very heavy rain and tough field conditions, playing against a bunch of players that you've been watching play for the national team. You know, players like Sonnet and Horan have been on the national team, and it's you know, it had to be just a heck of a an adrenaline moment for Abby Alinsky, young Abby Alinsky. Danica Evans, we got to see her flip throw. That was good. And so it's always nice to see that. And, you know, I think you're right. I think they're going to come in and have a much better outing at home against the Houston Dash. Be there at Orlando City Stadium, 5 o'clock on Sunday, and cheer on your pride. Speaking of the pride, Dave. Sydney LaRue had a little dust-up today with Merritt Paulson, the owner of the Portland Thorns and Portland Timbers. A lot of people don't realize this goes back an actually a week to when Merritt Paulson was very critical of the officiating, accusing Dom Dwyer of diving to earn the penalty to that to which Sasha Kljestan eventually tied the game, and then Dom eventually won the game. And Sydney did make some remarks back to Merritt Paulson on Twitter about, you know, about his remarks about the, you know, basically about his salt, the salt that he was pouring all over the sidewalk there in Portland. And this week, then, you know, as luck would have it, the Thorns host the Pride, and she goes up there, and she was not permitted to bring Cassius onto the pitch after the game, as she's accustomed to doing. She definitely, I don't know that she handled it great by sort of accusing Merritt Paulson of instituting a new policy. The Thorns deny that that is a new policy. The Thorns said that, you know, only Thorns and Timbers families allowed on the field after the game for reasons, I guess. But she didn't take kindly to it. And then Merritt Paulson acted like a big, big child on the, you know, on social media, and called her out. And it was just not, it was just not good. It was not a good look on his part. It was not a good look on anybody's part, but especially, you know, it was a bad look when he said maybe, you know, you shouldn't kick up conspiracy theories and concentrate on playing. It was basically, to me, came off as a privileged white rich male telling a woman of color, shut up and play. And that is not a good look at all.
It absolutely came across as that. And to do it to in relation to her as a mother, which is what her complaint was, hey, I want my kid to be able to come out here after the game. He runs around, has fun. It's cool for him to see that.
Yeah.
Well, for him to call her out on that, like you said, not only is it the privileged white thing, but man, to a mom?
Yeah. You know, if you've ever had a child that age in a place where they can see their parent, it is not an easy task to keep that child from getting to that parent at some point.
No, it is not.
That kid wants to be with that parent. And so I'm sure that Cassius is now used to the fact that for, you know, 90 minutes, that's off limits. But, you know, it's really difficult for these NWSL players to really ply their trade, Dave, when they've got this unique, you know, life role that men don't have. And it's, you know, kudos to the team for being accommodating and letting the kids travel with the team.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing. But, you know, I think it's such a minor thing to allow him on the field. And honestly, Dave, I think if she just goes and gets him and brings him on the field, no one's going to kick him out. No one's going to say anything. What are they going to do? Kick Sidney LaRue out of the stadium? It's the game's
right.
Over anyway. So honestly, she probably could have just done it, even if she was set. Even if they told her no, she could have just said, "You know what? I'm doing it." You know, and probably some, you know, people would have walked away grumbling, but you know, would have put up with it. But this was just not a good look on anybody's part, and it's, you know, I don't think Paulson created this policy just because of the dust up they had the week before. So he has a point in that situation, but he definitely reacted very poorly, and it's just a bad look for him. It's a bad look for the league. This is a franchise that's one of the keystone franchises for the NWSL. Portland Thorns, you know, leading the league in attendance. They're the defending champions. You can't have your owner running his mouth like this. And I fully anticipate some kind of fine. He just got fined for his remarks about the officiating in the Orlando City game. So Merritt Paulson, not a big fan of purple.
Not a good week for Paulson. He went about a lot of things wrong. Social media will get you in trouble, especially if you're an owner of a team or a coach of a team or a player of a team. I don't have a problem with almost anybody saying anything they want about that. It's kind of a free speech thing.
Yeah.
However, free speech does not mean freedom from consequences.
Sure.
And the consequences this time were the fine initially, and then whatever bad publicity is going to come from getting into a tiff with Sidney LaRue. And you're talking about one of the, you know, beloved U.S. Women's National Team players and her incredibly cute little boy. You're going to lose that public relations battle.
Yeah, there's no sense even escalating it. And somebody, as we are often saying on Twitter, delete your account. That's just not,
yeah.
It's not good. You know, the thing is, Merritt Paulson and Sidney LaRue, it could just like join a fight club and just handle this. And then of course Sidney would just destroy him. And then everybody would remember him by saying his name was Merritt Paulson. His name was Merritt Paulson.
And, yes, LaRue would absolutely destroy him. I wouldn't want to go up against her, that's for sure.
That was just shout out to all of you who have watched Fight Club and know what I was referencing there.
Yes.
Okay, Dave, so I think it's time to get to this week's guest. We've talked about him a little earlier in the program. Very, very pleased to have with us a mainstay for Orlando City over the past few years. Not one of only a very few of those, as we've seen. Mm-hmm. Great turnover. So why don't we get to our guest? We'll do that right after this. All right, joining us on the Mainland Podcast this week, we are very pleased to have with us Orlando City goalkeeper Joe Bendick. Joe, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you.
So I wanted to start out by, first of all, congratulations on the clean sheet on Friday. Obviously a team effort, but my question about the game is that to my untrained eye, let's say, it looked like the team in front of you did a pretty good job of limiting Philadelphia's chances to the angles and not letting anything come right up the middle on you. Is that the way you saw it, first of all? And if so, how much easier does that make your job as a goalkeeper?
Yeah, Friday especially, the guys did a great job. they were really committed to getting that clean sheet. And it's just like you said, it. They forced some guys into some wide angles, didn't really allow too much. I think we let David Akam in maybe one or two times, and Bedoya had a shot just outside the 18, but one cross slipped through. But yeah, in total, when they get them onto the angles like that, you know that your percentages of making a save have just gotten a lot higher. So it definitely makes things easier for a goalkeeper.
Well, I'm sure you do appreciate that. Now, of course, there are plenty of new guys in front of you there. How is that, building that chemistry, obviously, working with them, and then having that backline shuffle, which I guess you're kind of used to from last year. But tell us about what that's been like so far this season.
Yeah, I think it's a really positive thing. We've shuffled through three sets of center back pairings, and I think if you look around the league and you go back to last year's and the past years of teams that play, no team's ever going to have the two same center backs or three same center backs if they play like that throughout the entire year. You need guys to come in, you need guys to play, and I think it's only a positive thing that we've gotten to see so many different players early this year, because for them that gives them a big boost of confidence, and for us, for the team, we know that we can rely on every single guy. I mean, we've come back to win in three games now, and if I'm not mistaken, in my time, that's never happened before at this club. I don't think we've ever come behind to win any games. And we're starting to see an upward trend here with the defensive backs, and getting that shutout in Philly is a showing of the work that they're putting in and the time that we're putting in as a unit to kind of get things going here. And just like I said, it's only a positive thing.
Joe, when you have so many new faces come in, like, Mo and RJ and Amro Tarek and Sané, how long does it take to get the communication down between yourself in the net and that back line?
Yeah, it's an ongoing piece of work. You start in preseason and you talk on the field, you talk off the field, you talk in the locker room, you talk in the treatment room, talk in the gym, and you just try to figure out how guys react to different situations, how guys react to different forms of communication, and you learn that to the best of your ability. And then, you hope that all your communication is kind of put in during training, and then because in the game it's extremely difficult to hear mm-hmm. one another, so it's almost like you're hearing that person's voice in the back of your head, and in the game you can't really hear it. You're hearing it from training. So a time frame, I'm not sure. I think it varies for per relationship. But like I said, right now we're starting to see a good upward trend.
Now, Joe, of course, you know, Dom returned to the lineup, and since he's been back, he's been on a bit of a scoring tear along with Chris Mueller. How has the uptick in the offense helped you guys on the other end of the pitch?
Yeah, you know, it's that if you've got a powerful offense, it makes it a lot easier to defend because you're not having to defend for 90 plus minutes. You're only having to defend for, 60 minutes or, maybe 30 minutes. I don't know the exact time. You don't have to constantly be under pressure the entire time. You're keeping the ball, and it's a more positive mindset where you're finding the strikers that are kind of just lurking, ready to get the ball, and they're outlets for the other team, and you're just making a proactive defensive, motion or tackle, and then you're keeping the ball again, and then that gives you life when you have to defend for long stretches. And if you score the first and second goal, score the first goal and you're defending for the last 30 minutes of a game, which happens a lot, you have a lot of life for those last 30 minutes, and you're ready to go.
You know, Dave brought up Chris Mueller, and we had him on the podcast. We also had Cam Lindley on here, and some of the other guys we've talked to, some of the newer guys, have all mentioned you as being a positive leadership influence on the entire group. How important is it to you as a veteran player to take on that role and kind of get outside your comfort zone and be that leader?
Yeah. For me, it's an interesting one because they say like goalkeepers are leaders of themselves just because they wear a different jersey, but I don't really buy it. I think it is something that you really have to try at, every single day. I'm not saying that I'm the best leader in the world, but I care enough about this club and about this city that I can take it personally. I've been here, this is my third year, and we haven't made the playoffs in 2 years. And after getting a taste of the playoffs when I was in Toronto, I really want it back. And I know there are certain, I wouldn't even say certain, I know that all the players here can help us to contribute towards that. And, just some of the younger guys, they need a little bit of direction. And I don't think it's just me as a leader. I think it's, there's a lot of guys on this team that have played, whether or not it's in the MLS, but they've played a lot of games. And so if they can just get the right communication and the right kind of direction, I think we see some really positive results. And, Cam starting the season off for us, that was big for him to play some minutes. And then, Chris coming in now and scoring some big goals for us is huge because, I mean, him and Dom, I think, are extremely dangerous. And then you've got Stefano, who's just as dangerous. So, and you're not even talking about your two starters with Coleman and Miram. So it's awesome to see, and they get a lot of leadership through those attacking guys as well.
Now, you mentioned, your love for this city. Obviously, you've had plenty of time in net in front of the wall. What's, from your point of view, what's it like when the wall's behind you versus when you're on the other side of the field?
It's interesting because when I warm up, I'm always by the wall. It's kind of, through the years, it's been a huge motivation for me. I remember we were playing Red Bull, and I had a guy off in like down in the lower bowl in the handicap section in a wheelchair, and he's screaming my name, and then I turn to him and I look at him because anybody screams your name that enough, gets your attention. And you just, hey, kick some ass. And I'm, you know, break a smile. But it's just like, you get that from every, you can feel that kind of energy from every single person in the stadium. You know, when they're behind you, it's like somebody's got your back. And then when you're kind of facing them, it's like you want to give them everything. So I enjoy both sides of it, honestly.
Joe, in the course of a goalkeeper's career, you make hundreds, thousands of saves over the course of your career. But one of our staff writers wanted to know this question. Is there one save that you point to and say, that's the best save I ever made, or that one really stands out to me?
There's definitely memorable ones. I think each goalkeeper has a set of traits and has some things that they're really, really good at, really comfortable with. For me, you know, I really wouldn't put it down to any one save. It's just the saves in big moments are the best for me. You know, ones that come late in games, ones that can be in the first minute of the game and you make a save and all of a sudden, you know, the guys in front of you kind of wake up a little bit and then they go out. I think Dallas last year, I made one save early in the game, and to the supporters, to anybody else, like, it doesn't really look like much, you know, it's just like a near post save and kind of like squirted out of bounds. But you could feel like it lifts the team. It lifts me even, you know, it gives me a little bit of confidence to go for the rest of the game. And then they went out and scored, you know, four goals. It wasn't Dallas. I think it was New England. And we ended up winning like 6-1 or something like that.
Yep. New England game.
So yeah, just those big moments. And I like that this year, those saves are coming. They're coming while we're winning rather than while we're tied. You know, I go back on it again. The last few years, this team is, I honestly don't think we've ever come from behind to win a game. We've come from behind to tie games late, and it's been good. It's a good show of character, but this team now has this three wins when we're down. And so for me, the best saves have been, you know, this year, while we're up and we're winning and we keep that lead and we stay on top of teams, and we get that result.
Now, obviously, you spend a lot of time, plenty of minutes on the field. It's rare that we see anybody between the sticks other than you. But tell us about the guys that are behind you, you know, the backups, and, you know, how they're coming along and, you know, what we don't get to see.
Yeah, so we've had, you know, we got Earl Edwards, Adam Grimwis, and Mason, I can't even still can't pronounce his last name.
Neither can we.
I think he's told me, but I can't do it. But these are guys that are all, you know, when we go into training, they are very, very eager to learn. I can't, you know, I know that on paper, you know, Earl is the number two, and it goes 3 and 4. And Earl got some minutes last year right at the end there. And those are huge minutes. Even though it's just one game for him, I think he learned more in that one game than he did in the entire time that he was in Orlando. It's just that real moment of this is what it's like to play in a game. And now he has that like that edge about him, and he's really pushing to get better, and he's really pushing me to, you know, to be on top of my game. And I can see it in him now that you know, he really wants to learn. He really wants to get better as a goalkeeper. And then you got a guy like Adam who's just coming in to an MLS squad, and you know, he's the energy ball, you know. He's always talking and he's jumping around, and he's got a lot of good qualities, and you know, he's also very eager to learn. And then Mason's young, and I can't speak more about him. He's a case study in himself. Before he was diagnosed with cancer, he was like, I'm extremely confident individual. And he doesn't talk a lot during training, but when I hear a good job from Mason, I know his standard is so high that I've done a really good job. And I think it's important for each goalkeeper, you know, to see those compliments from each other. And for Mason, you know, his ceiling is really high, because he's getting to learn from three good goalkeepers, and he's had a couple different goalkeeper coaches now while he's at Orlando. His work ethic is incredible. He's in the gym from 6:30 a.m. until 4:30 p.m. and eats, sleeps, breathes goalkeeping. I mean, he's awesome. I can't wait to see once he kind of grows up a little bit and really shows what he's got.
Well, Joe, before we let you go, something I haven't seen from this coaching staff in a couple years that we're seeing this year, it just seems like the coaching staff is more, they seem more confident, they seem happier, they seem more content with the way the team is coming together, even when the team wasn't getting results. And my question for you is does this year's squad, are you seeing in practice and on the field different chemistry, different energy than in the past couple of years?
Yeah, I think the overall level of players that we have in the squad is high. When I say that, I mean there's not a huge gap between, you know, the first guy that would play and the last guy that would play. It's very much more level. So everybody can understand each other a little bit better, I think. You know, and the coaching staff has now had almost 2 years to implement what they want and what works and what doesn't. I mean, you've seen us go from a 4-4-2, you know, with a diamond, to a 4-2-3-1, back to a diamond, and then now to a 4-2-3-1. You know, we're learning things about each other and about our team, about our coaching staff, about individuals, every day in training and every day on the field, and, you know, what makes us the best team altogether. So yeah, in a way, you know, the chemistry has just been building, and we've added players who can come in and add to that chemistry and add to that kind of togetherness as a team.
Well, Joe Bendick, it has been a real treat to have you on the podcast. We wish you the best of luck throughout the rest of the season, and just thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Once again, big thank you to Joe Bendick for being our guest on podcast number 121. Can't believe it's been 121 episodes, and we're just now getting Joe on the show, but thanks to Rafa Cabrera for setting that up from the Orlando Communications Department, Orlando City Communications Department. Dave, I'm sitting here in my Orlando City Sea Cows shirt as we record this, and I am thinking that was a huge, huge interview for us getting Joe.
I was when you texted me earlier that we were going to have Joe on, I think my exact term was sweet. So I was looking forward to talking to him. I think that was indeed a big get, and he was absolutely fantastic. I thought that was, you know, we do a lot of interviews, and that one was hands down one of the better ones that we've had. I thought he was great and insightful, and I really appreciate him coming on and being with us.
Same. And in case you didn't get the tie in there, the sea cows and the huge interview. Sea cows are huge, so that's where that tie in was. So that didn't just like go nowhere. That actually had a purpose. Not a great purpose. I'm not gonna claim that one as an all-star, all timer. Let's keep that. Let's put that on the best of.
Is that going in the archives?
It's not going on the best of the mainland. Yeah, no, the best of the mainland show. That's not gonna be.
Okay.
It. But yeah, that was.
That's a really short show anyway. Yeah,
it had a purpose. That's all I'm saying. Might not have been a good one, but it had a purpose. All right. Okay. So let's get to this week's Ask the Mainland podcast. Anything, which will be very short because we only got one question this week. But here's how you do that. You can hit us up on Twitter. Our Twitter handle, of course, is @TheMainland. And the @ is the @ symbol. It's not the word @. So if you've been trying like crazy to get us and failing, and you've been spelling out the word @, that's probably why.
That might be why.
Yeah. So it's the @ symbol, TheMainland. That is our Twitter account. If you put in a tweet to that account and you use the hashtag AskTMLPC, and then ask your question, we will read it on the air and we'll answer it. It doesn't have to be about soccer. It can be about anything. We will answer any question you may have, and we will give you as good an answer as we can give you. We might not know, for example, when the deadline is for filing tax extensions and things like that. We may not know that, but we're going to still give you an answer either way.
Well, I think by the time this drops, if you are asking that question, you're probably in trouble, actually.
Yeah, just go ahead and move out of the country to a non-extradition nation.
Wow.
Yeah, but I mean, keep listening to the podcast, though.
Oh, well, sure. That's international. We're international.
That's right. So the other way you can do that is you can write to us at the mainland. We are at themainland@gmail.com. That is how you can write to us. And, of course, Maine is spelled like a lion's mane. And, we'll get it on the email and we'll read it that way. Actually, we just got another question in. That's pretty cool.
All right.
So, Dave, what is our friend Mark Johnson? What would he like to know this week?
Friend of the show, Mark Johnson, with very timely, at least while we're recording this question, if Toronto wins the Champions League, he's talking about the CONCACAF Champions League, does it significantly improve the standing of MLS?
My answer is that it doesn't significantly improve the standard of MLS, but I do think it shows the growth of the league overall and how competitive the league is becoming. That is my short and sweet answer, Mark Johnson.
I agree. I don't think it significantly improves the standing of MLS, especially since I think Toronto maybe is taking this a little bit more serious than some of the MLS squads have in the past. Oftentimes, they've been more worried about the regular season and have maybe tried out new guys or rested some of the stalwarts of their team and not given it as much merit. So I'm glad that Toronto is trying to win it. I hope they do. I mean, I'm an MLS fan. I want us to win it. But like you, I don't think it will significantly do anything, but it will still be nice.
Mm-hmm. So we have a question on Twitter. This actually literally just came in. Rich Ransom wants to know, it's super early, but who do you think will coach OCB in 2019? Assuming, of course, as we are, that what Nicky Budalic said will happen and it will come back as a Division III USL Division III team in 2019. Who do you think, Dave?
Wow. Okay. I have given this no thought whatsoever.
Well, then it's kind of like any of the other questions we get.
Well, that's I guess that's true. But this wasn't even on my radar.
It's a great question.
It's a fantastic question. I don't know if I've got an answer for it, though. I'm going to defer to you if you've got any thoughts on who you think's on the radar.
I'll take a shot at it. I think that there's a few potential candidates. I think that Bobby Murphy is a guy that they might want to look at. He's always been a development guy, and this will be a development team, and he's had some experience not only in the youth ranks, but also was the interim coach for Orlando City in MLS. So he's a potential guy they might want to do that. Maybe a former player like Lewis Neal would want to step into that role, or Luke Bowden, somebody like that. Those are guys who might gain some consideration, you know, if they're interested in coaching and you know, apply for the job and that kind of thing. You know, it's very difficult to say. There's a lot of really good coaches that have come through Orlando City's system, but now they're in higher positions. You know, guys like James O'Connor is coaching Division II and may soon get an MLS gig. Mm-hmm. And then there's you know, the staff that have gone on to coach at San Antonio and that kind of thing. So there's been some potential guys that you would think maybe those guys have a shot at that, but you know, they've already moved beyond the Division III. So yeah, I think a guy like Lewis Neal is maybe somebody who doesn't have a lot of experience would be somebody you would look at in that situation. Maybe Jason Christ has some buddy in mind that, you know, is somebody that is like-minded to how he is, and mm-hmm. maybe he'll bring that person in. It's kind of hard to say. I'm just throwing some names out there, obviously, but I think that if you're looking for any ties to Orlando, you might be looking at a Luke Bowden, a Lewis Neal, a Bobby Murphy, maybe potentially a Yordani Alvarez or somebody like that. It would be interesting to see maybe even, I don't know. I mean, that's kind of where my headspace is at. Again, like you said, it's something you've given no thought to, and these are all things I'm just riffing off the top of my head, because this question, like I said, just came in before I asked it.
Well, and if Jason has anything to do with the selection, it'll be somebody we've never heard of.
That's probably true. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it will be interesting. I'm really looking forward to getting OCB back and getting those kids some playing time. It's like, you know, we've seen nothing of Pierre Da Silva this year, and he's got nowhere to play right now. So it's, you know, while he's been a valuable practice player for Orlando City, it's, you know, not sure this is doing his development any good right now.
No, it was a lot better being able to watch him on OCB and see at least give him a chance to continue that type of development. In-game time is invaluable, even if it's at a lower level.
Yeah, you know, another guy who just came to mind is coaching Orlando City Youth right now is Seb Hines. If he wants to be a coach, he's another guy who might he's got a good mind for the game, mm-hmm. so you never know. So that's a great question, Rich. Thanks for asking that one. I'm looking forward to getting OCB back and watching the development of the young players in Orlando City's system, and it should be fun. So thank you for the two of you who have asked Ask the Mainland Podcast anything. You can again do that by emailing us themainland@gmail.com or hitting us up on Twitter at themainland with the hashtag AskTMLPC. So that's how you do it, and that's our Ask the Mainland Podcast for this week. Dave, we got a game coming up Saturday night.
Yes, we do.
The Orlando City is going to be playing the San Jose Earthquakes in a fixture that no team has ever won. 0-3 in the series since these two teams have started playing in MLS. Crazy last. It's the funny thing is Orlando City has led all three meetings, and all three have ended up in draws. Two of those have been tied by Chris Wondolowski. Two of them have been tied in the final 10 minutes of the game. So, and one of them, very memorably, the Pulse tribute game right after the Pulse shootings, when the stoppage time went beyond the announced stoppage time, and Shea Salinas broke Orlando Hearts with that really, really late goal. And
that was ridiculous.
A game that the team really wanted with all of their hearts and souls. So it's been a very hard-fought series, but nobody's been able to gain the upper hand. What do you think is going to be the key matchup, and what is your final score prediction for Saturday night at Orlando City Stadium?
So, key matchup is going to be that that right back side. You know, they're going to have when you were talking about Wondolowski, I was the Seinfeld was going through my head, and Newman, and I'm like, Wando, you know. So I think they've broken our hearts so many times with late goals, and of course you could get tired at the end of that, and the depth on that side and in the back is not as good as we would like it. So I think how we defend is going to be key. I think we can get goals on the other side. I think confidence is high there, but if we want to get the win, it's going to have to fall to the defense. That being said, I think this team is feeling pretty good right now. They're coming home. I'm going to predict a 2-1 Orlando win.
All right, that is that's cool. That's cool. I agree that the to me the key matchup is the back line against the attack of San Jose. San Jose's been a team that's actually been able to find some offense this season. They are, I believe, they're coming off a 2-2 draw themselves this week, but they are a team that they just look like they have some good attacking pieces, maybe a little bit loose in the back. And Orlando is going to need, Dave, I believe, to really prove that what they did at Philadelphia wasn't a fluke, number one, and number two, that they can actually even improve upon that defensive performance. Mm-hmm. That's a very important thing for Orlando to establish now that they've been able to keep a clean sheet is can you do that again? Can you have that kind of a defensive performance again? And San Jose comes in, they're not, they're 10th in the West, only 5 points. They've scored 9 goals, but it seems like when they do score them, they score a couple at a time. So, you know, this is a team that, for whatever reason, Orlando City has stumbled against, and I think it's important to keep Wando off the board and, try to keep that defensive mojo going, especially with Spectre out and with potentially Sutter and Allen both out still for another week. I think we can pretty much guarantee Sutter Allen being out if that was indeed a hamstring or a quad.
Mm-hmm.
Not likely to practice all week. Don't know the severity of Sutter's. Don't know if he'll be back. But yeah, it's certainly not the easiest situation, especially like I said, when a team has had a week to game plan for it. It's not like Philadelphia, who came in and said, you know, we don't have to. We're thinking about Sutter or Allen. We're not. They, you know, Will Johnson at right back. They weren't even thinking about that.
Right.
So. But yeah, they've got, I mean, they got some players. I mean, Quincy Ameriquois and we talked about Wando. He's a dangerous, dangerous player in this league, no matter what he does in international competition. And
Shea Salinas
doesn't miss those gimmies in MLS the way he does for the US. They've got some good players in the midfield, like Godoy. They've got, Danny Hoyson, good player. Mm-hmm. And Yamir Hika, I think is how his name's spelled. He really played well against Orlando City last year.
Right.
And, you know, they've got a long-range threat with, you know, on set pieces with Florian Jungwirth. So, you know, this is a team that can create problems and can score goals. And, they came here – the last time they came across the country, they scored 2 against Orlando City. But I'm going to say that this team does a little better this time, but until one of these teams wins one of these, I'm going to call it a draw. It's going to be 1-1.
1-1, okay. Well, the good news is we didn't predict the same thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know if that's good or bad, because it doesn't. It seems like no matter what we do, it doesn't. It's wrong. So you can bet that it won't be 2-1 or 1-1.
Yeah, that's probably a safe bet. But I mean, I mean, a really optimistic me would say 3-1 Orlando. That's if I were being really optimistic. But
I'd agree with that optimistic. That's if, because I thought about that too. So that would have been my optimistic.
The main thing
prediction
for me, though, is that, you know, this is a team that hasn't quite come together yet. They're missing some pieces, and it's getting that consistency. Can they keep that consistency going? Especially, you know, granted, it's only three in a row, but that does sort of become a thing when you start a streak. That does sort of become a thing, and I don't know if it will, how it will affect them. I mean, it's a veteran team, so it's kind of hard to say. Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. It's a mixture of veterans and young players, but I think there are enough.
I was going to say Chris Mueller would disagree with you there.
I think there are enough veterans on this team that I don't think it should affect them, but you never know. I mean, it remains to be seen how this team will play when they're expected to win, right? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
They were not expected to beat the Red Bulls. They were not expected to go on the road and win. They've done those two things. And now teams are, pundits are going to start picking them to win, and they're going to be started to be expected to win these games. And that can have an effect on your mindset. So I'm not saying this team shouldn't win the game. They should. But, you know, we'll see how it goes. I'm just going to predict 1-1 just because that's kind of how I roll. It's like this series just seems to be destined to always finish in a draw, just like the majority of the New England games seem destined to be, 2-2. This is another thing with San Jose.
It's probably a very smart pick on your part, to be honest.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just hedging my bets. I don't know. Maybe I'm just copping out. Maybe it's a cop out. I don't know. But we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
We won't see our good friend Darwin Serin, because he's moved on to the Houston Dynamo. But we will enjoy this matchup on Saturday night. It should be an exciting one, and certainly, you know, one of the great goal scorers in MLS history is coming to Orlando City to play against the Lions, and it would be really great. I know I've said this before. It would be really great if Justin Merrim could get on the scoreboard.
Absolutely, it's about time. I think Chris is still going to try and you know, make it 3-for-3 here, but and if he does, great. But I agree, it would be great if we could get Merrim in there and have it be an assist from Sasha, just to keep that particular thing rolling along.
Yeah, but however it happens, we will be back next week to talk about it and to dissect it. We will be back to talk about the Pride and the Houston Dash and any and all upcoming business. Of course, Orlando City will be going back on the road, and the Pride will be playing again. And so there's lots and lots of stuff that we'll be back to discuss next week. So why don't we call it an end to episode number 121 and put this in the books. And please, if you like to read about Orlando City, come to themainland.com and read all our stuff. We'll have complete game coverage of both the men's and women's teams, as we always do. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. And, of course, recommend our podcast to your friends. There's no new five-star reviews this week on iTunes, Dave, so I don't have to read any further stuff on the air.
But we want to.
We do. Because this week, I actually, my voice made it to the end. So I could have actually done it. But
So go ahead and put one in this week, because by next week, he should be back to 100%.
Yeah, leave a five-star review and write out a review. Don't just don't just click on five stars and be done with it. Write us a review, and we'll read that sucker on the air and give you full credit for your creative writing.
Because that's what we and he is the editor, so that is what he does. Is that's what he does for me and the rest of the staff. So get in on it. It's really nice.
All right. Well, that will do it. On behalf of David Rowe, I am Michael Citro, the founder and managing editor of themainland.com, signing off the way I always do, by saying go City and go Pride.